From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Do we live in a colorblind society? Can we? It's a question Americans have been asking for decades, and it has come up again as presidential contenders Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama battle it out. In particular, remarks by Hillary Clinton and some of her supporters were read as racially coded language. Here's a bit from former president and possible first husband, Bill Clinton.
This whole thing is the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen.
So do comments like this point out our inability to talk or listen honestly about race? Joining me now to consider the question, Jewel Taylor Gibbs, a professor emeritus at the UC Berkeley School of Social Welfare. She's also the author of 5 books, including Race and Justice, Rodney King and O.J. Simpson in A House Divided, and Charles Ogletree, Jesse Klemenko Professor of Law and Founder and Executive Director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice at Harvard Law School. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to be with you today.
So, Jewel, I'd like to start with you. You're a clinical psychologist. Help us unpack what African American people might have heard in the comments by Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and BET founder Bob Johnson.
Well, I think that many of the comments have been coded language, as we say in this field, language that can be taken many different ways by various listeners. And I think your opening comments were correct in the fact that although, for example, Bill Clinton's comment about Obama was not really on the surface a racial comment, I think it really is a much broader issue when Bill and Hillary Clinton and their surrogates are making comments on Obama. There really is an undercurrent that he is not really prepared to be president, that he's not competent, and that they are trying to diminish many of his positions, for example, on the war, to distort them, and to denigrate him personally.
Let me get Professor Ogletree in here. And how do you think this exemplifies the bigger issue of how we discuss race or how we hear? Does this issue really concern how we hear each other across the racial divide?
Indeed it does. What it makes clear is that race still matters. Barack Obama has done an incredible job of generating support across the political religious and economic spectrum, race spectrum and gender spectrum. And yet race is real. And I think the comments, as Dr. Gibbs points out, send a message to some people, whether intended or not, that you better be careful because this guy, because of his race, may not be what's needed, may be risky, may not be all that it's intended to be. But I think the reality is that the American people can see beyond that, not in every case, but with Barack Obama, I think they see him as somebody who has many skills and many talents to offer all Americans, and that's why he's done so well in every race. And I think we'll continue every race, literally and figuratively, every race he's run in primaries, with every race of people in the United States. I think that will continue to be the case.
Now, when you look at this issue, and Professor Gibbs, I'm going to go to you on this. You have written a book that talks about how people perceived Rodney King and O.J. Simpson. Is this really an issue of flashpoints? I mean, the presidential election is huge. People are talking about this in part because it is so important. How does the issue of critical flashpoints in American history relate to how we have these larger discussions?
Well, I think that you can look throughout American history and you can see that whenever blacks have made progress, there has been, there have been many negative reactions. And you can also look at individual races, even in recent years, where the issue of race has been paramount. And that has been true ever since the 60s. And I think that what we have to understand is that there is still a very large number of Americans who are not prepared to see blacks as equals in any field, despite, many advances that we have made. And for example, I think one of the things that I see in some of the comments by the Clinton surrogates is the attempt to make Barack Obama, just another black man. Now, what I mean by that is that they're using this coded languages with stereotypes about, you know, Andrew Cuomo said he was chucking and jiving. Another person went to England, one of her campaign associates, and called him cool and hip. Words that he is, some of his comments have been dumb. All of these comments are meant to diminish him and to disparage him. And he has tried, on the other hand, to make himself into a really cosmopolitan international candidate.
But Professor, how about the issue of how we listen, not just how these comments went out, but how blacks and whites and people of other races may listen differently? I'll let you know that there's been a debate among some of our listeners as to whether or not race is the issue. And I wonder if part of it is if African Americans and other people of color are listening more for racially coded content. What do you think about that?
I think everyone's listening for it. Here's the point. When Bob Johnson has these subtle suggestions about Barack Obama's drug use, and then he claims it's no, it's about his community service, everybody, black and white, Republican, Democrat, know exactly what he was trying to do. It's not coded so only black people understood that. Everybody understood that that's a tactic that will be used in politics. But what's even more important is that people aren't angry about it, which is good, but they're concerned about whether or not anyone thinks this office is so important that they were used surrogates to engage in conduct like this. The good news, I think, is that there's some people whose views aren't going to change, and we can't expect America to be colorblind. But the good news is that Barack Obama was unknown 4 years ago until July 2004, the Democratic National Convention. The more you know him, the more you love him, the more you see him as somebody who can make a difference for all Americans. And I think that what we saw in the last week is just the beginning of using the wedge of race, but as you will see going forward, it won't deter him, even though many of us on the sidelines will continue to debate and argue about it. It won't stop him from his message. He doesn't have to prove he's too black or not black enough.
Professor Ogletree,
the best candidate.
Let me frame this in another context. You do work on reparations, some of the leading work on reparations. And when you speak to African-American audiences about it, is how you speak and how they listen different when you speak to non-African-American audiences?
It changes, right, in two ways. And most whites are against reparations. Most blacks are supportive of it because they have a sense of the history of slave America. On the other hand, I've given debates in places as far as Oregon where a white audience told me, one guy stood up and said, look, I think you have a good case for reparations. I don't think we're that bad here in Oregon, but I know some people in Kentucky. They are real racist. And so it really is environment. And so my sense is that people hear it differently, but we shouldn't let that define our arguments or who we are. Yes, America will hear issues about race differently, but we have to make sure it's not just their heart that's reacting, but go a little higher and get their head to think more critically. And try to not be blinded by race, not to see, as Dr. Taylor Gibbs has done so great in her book, Rodney King and O.J. Simpson are paradigms, but look at Willie Horton in the 88 election with Dukakis and Bush. Look at Harvey Gantt running for Senate, and Jesse Helms didn't talk about crime. He talked about blacks taking the jobs. And never said a word, just showed a black man. Look at Harold Ford, the worst example. A black man running for Senate, and they have a white woman talking about, Harold, I'll see you later. What kind of message that sent to North Carolina? Just enough to keep Harold Ford from becoming the next senator, African-American, out of North Carolina, but not enough for people not to see this is an issue that offended blacks and whites, and we need to move beyond it in America, regardless of where we come from.
Professor Taylor Gibbs, when Professor Ogletree says move beyond it, can we? And if so, how? And also, who should be carrying the water on this one? Is it always black folks who have to move the ball forward?
No, I don't think so. I think, in fact, we have to make people accountable for their comments. And one of the things that has been troubling about what has been happening in this debate is the way the Clintons and their surrogates have turned it back on Obama. It was not Obama who first made any comments that were controversial. He never said anything about that they were racist. But the press picked it up and the press elaborated on it. For example, Hillary Clinton's comment about Martin Luther King, that he protested, but it took a president to actually, you know, sign the legislation and make his dream come true. Now, that's an interesting comment, and a lot of people would not disagree with it on the surface. But it seemed to many blacks that she was really demeaning the role of our martyred black civil rights leader, who is a great hero to black people. And we all know that that legislation never would have been passed but for the years of protest, the people who went to jail, the people who were beaten and even killed. And when it finally looked like it would split this country apart, that is when the president and the Democratic Congress passed the 1964 and the 1965 Civil Rights Acts. So they were passed under great pressure. There and guilt in that Congress when they saw these people being beaten and assaulted by dogs. So this is what we are saying when we say blacks are offended. But also we are saying, and I agree with my colleague and friend, that we must make people accountable so that both whites and blacks are able to detect these subtle racist comments, whether or not they seem to be intentional.
Well, professors, we're going to have to leave the conversation there, but it'll definitely continue. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charles Ogletree is Jesse Clemenko Professor of Law and founder and executive director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice at Harvard Law School. And Jewel Taylor Gibbs is a professor emeritus at the UC Berkeley School of Social Welfare. She's also the author of 5 books, including Race and Justice, Rodney King and O.J. Simpson in a House Divided. She was at KALW in San Francisco.